WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Now, I watch my share of TV, or possibly more than my share of TV, according to some people. But one of the new shows that's getting a lot of attention and I haven't seen yet is called Jessica Jones. It's based on a Marvel Comics superhero who's become a private investigator.
A big part of the job is looking for the worst in people. Turns out I excel at that.
Jessica Jones is a superhero who is also a rape survivor.
That's Emily Nussbaum, The New Yorker's television critic.
The backstory of Jessica Jones is that she was traumatized by a supervillain who kidnapped her, used mind control, and forced her to be his girlfriend. So it's about a specific kind of trauma that involves not just sexual violence, but a kind of brainwashing, something that has left a feeling of guilt and collusion in her.
We used to do a lot more than just touch hands.
Yeah. It's called rape.
What? Which part of staying in five-star hotels, eating in all the best places, doing whatever the hell you wanted is rape?
The part where I didn't want to do any of it.
And one of the reasons that the show is so powerful is that it's not simply about sexual violence, but about a much broader, richer metaphor that has to do with consent, coercion, abuse, the excuses people make, and the traumatic aftermath for people who go through things like this. And what's powerful about it is that the survivor of the assault is at the center of the show.
Jessica Jones may be the first superhero show to confront rape in any significant way, but Emily has written about a surprising number of programs on the air now that deal with rape very differently from what we've ever seen on TV. She points out that it's not just a plot on crime shows, but in family dramas, fantasy, even in comedy.
Some people have criticized this and they've seen it as very exploitative. But by and large, I think this is a really encouraging moment because I actually think, what can I say? I mean, I think sexual violence is a part of the world, and that as women's lives become more central to TV portrayals, that's part of it. I think there was actually a big breakthrough moment in terms of TV presentations of sexual violence in general, and honestly, it was The Sopranos. There was this period when it was the show everybody was talking about. And then a while into the show, one of the main characters, Tony Soprano's psychiatrist, Dr. Melfi, was raped by a stranger in a parking lot on a staircase, and it was shown. It came out of the blue. And this is not, in general, the way that rape had been shown on TV.
Shut up. Don't turn around. I said shut up.
And so the Melfi rape plot became this cracking point for what could be shown on television and how it could be shown. And people wondered what the aftermath would be.
Hey. Come here. What are you? What's the matter? God, what's the matter?
It's okay. Go on.
What? I mean, you want to say something?
No.
Unbreakable, stay alive.
This is a clip from Kimmy Schmidt, which is a show on Netflix that Tina Fey and Robert Carlock created. That's a very strange sitcom about a girl who's moved to New York and has been through this enormously traumatic circumstance where she was trapped for years in a bunker by this psychopathic guy along with some other women. She's very chipper and very upbeat, but in the middle of the night, she has terrible nightmares.
I have to get out of here! He's waiting for me!
And her roommate is essentially saying to her, you have to get help.
What am I doing?
You tell me! This isn't the Chinatown bus. You can't just choke someone who's sleeping.
Titus, I'm so sorry.
Kimmy Schmidt, you are clearly repressing some stuff, and it is very unhealthy. For Titus, you need to talk to somebody.
Absolutely not.
What if you take a lover and you murder him in his sleep? Who are they going to pin that on? Rainbow Bright or Gay Tiki Barber?
I'm not taking a lover. That's gross.
One of the writers I think is really great on how pop culture represents women is Lindy West. She's written on issues like rape jokes and comedy, and she's dealt with a lot of controversy about that. She's currently writing for GQ.com and The Guardian. Hi, Lindy.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
One of the things about Kimmy Schmidt is, although it is never explicit about the fact that she's been raped, it's something that's so implicit in the situation because it's based on all of these other experiences that have happened, you know, these terrible stories in real life.
But in a way, the whole thing is about the way that that experience has manifested in her life and the way that she copes with it. So in that way, it's very present. Every part of her kind of wacky personality, you could read as a coping mechanism. So it, to me, it feels like the shadow of that, of those sexual assaults are there all the time.
Yeah. Her whole sense of joy and excitement about living again after the terrible thing has happened and trying to find a way to be the hero of her own story is also presented as something very feminine and sweet in a way that I actually found kind of fascinating and unusual.
Yeah. And if you look at the way that a lot of people actually function, people use humor as a coping mechanism for really, really dark things. If you want to make a comedy show about a rape survivor, you kind of have to balance it by making it really funny and bright and almost surreal. The other part of these conversations is that people say, you know, you can't take rape out of comedy. Like, you can't make rules about what people can address because people use comedy as catharsis. And yeah, they do. Survivors use comedy as catharsis.
Yeah. And actually, we should go to the Amy Schumer show. That's a parody of Friday Night Lights, in which the coach is telling the guys on his team the three rules, and one of the rules is no raping, and does not go down well.
Can we rape in away games?
Nope.
What if it's Halloween and she's dressed like a sexy cat?
Nope.
What if she thinks it's rape, but I don't?
Still no.
What about like a sexy ladybug?
Oh, yeah. Nope. You gotta stop.
No, you gotta stop!
If you write anything about rape, people fall all over themselves trying to find loopholes to make it okay to violate women's boundaries. It's really, really amazing how that sketch plays like a satire, but it's so accurate. People love to paint feminists as the opposite, like feminism as the opposite of comedy. But I love how all the stuff coming out of Amy Schumer this season, it really knocks that down. The idea that you can't be edgy if you want to talk about rape responsibly. And of course you can.
One of the things that's very thrilling is that there are so many more female voices on television that you get each person coming at it with their own aesthetic. Amy Schumer has a particular one. You have Broad City doing a different thing. The more they have women running shows and women's characters at the center of them, the more you get a range and the more each show doesn't have to be the representative for this. Because I think that's been some of the difficulty in talking about sexual violence on television in the past, is that when there's just one show that's doing it, that show has to represent. And people can much more understandably look to that show and say, is it doing the right thing? Is it educating people? And while I would obviously like portrayals of rape and sexual violence on TV to some extent spread good messages, I think that's a very limiting way to talk about any kind of art. And what's exciting is just seeing the field expanding. So you get all of these things in contradiction with one another. Let's talk about Game of Thrones, because you're way more of an expert on that than I am.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that show in terms of the portraits of sexual violence? It's a universe where rape is a constant threat.
I've thought about this a lot, and I'm pretty conflicted about the way that women's bodies and women's sexuality are used in that show. I think a lot of times they use nude women as set dressing, basically. When it comes to the actual plot lines involving sexual violence, I think it's actually done really well. The way that they are really honest about what it would be like for women in this kind of a lawless, hyper-masculine society. It's like I would find it insulting if the female characters in Game of Thrones were not constantly in peril. It would be a lie. It would be like, it would feel like men letting themselves off the hook.
Leave her face. I like her pretty. Baron, my lady's overdressed. I'm burdening her.
There are a lot of shows that use sexual violence for titillation and are hugely popular, which is...
Yeah, I was wondering what you felt about that. I'm always conflicted about this because, first of all, I actually have no problem in some cases with people using anything for titillation because I actually like a lot of pulp and horror and things like that as long as it's intelligent and it's doing it in a powerful way that actually has something to say about the world. On the other hand, it's hard to deny that some things actually are blatantly exploitative. Actually, we should probably talk about SVU.
Yeah.
Because I know both you and I have watched that show quite a lot. Why do you think you're so drawn to watching SVU? Because it would be hard to deny that that show is often, especially in the way that things are filmed, like blatantly exploitative in a sort of an old school Lifetime Woman in Peril kind of
way. I think the show depicts a wide range of rape victims. There's so many tropes that victims and survivors tend to fall into. And so I think there's some diversity on SVU in terms of how women handle assaults. It's also, this is kind of a fantasy, but it's nice to see justice done once in a while in a world where justice is quite often not done.
You know, Eddie, I've been doing this for a while, and I can see that you got a lot of weight on you. And I can also see that you want to let it go.
I can take it. I can carry it.
Carry what? What do they do to you?
I actually think the cheapness of it and the way in which it's sometimes accidentally funny and has this very formulaic feeling is kind of helpful to me as a viewer in this odd way because it makes it a safe thing to watch. I mean, it's only going to affect me so much.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the vast proportion of the audience for that show is a female audience. This is a side thing, but I wanted to bring up the Fosters, which is a show on ABC Family. The main character is Callie, who's a teenage girl. She's been in several different foster homes. And one thing that happens before the show begins is that she was raped by her foster brother. Hmm. She's the kind of character that could easily be a character in SVU. But instead of her being the somewhat exotic victim girl, you end up seeing her path through life.
It's rare that characters who've been raped on TV get to be more than a rape survivor, where, you know, they get to be whole characters, because that's how it is in real life. You aren't your trauma, you know? I mean, obviously, these traumas are hugely affecting and change people's lives, but you're still a human being and you're still complex and, you know, you have interests and
this is one of the things I think frankly is one of the big advantages to TV as a, you know, immersive serial storytelling thing is because it takes place over so much time. This can be an element in a character but not the element in the character.
Okay, what are we doing here?
You hear about that meteor shower tonight?
What about it?
Front row seats.
Well, it was very nice talking to you.
Yeah,
thank
great
you so
talking
much.
To you too. And, this was fun, I guess. I don't know.
I guess. I'll talk to you another time.
Okay, bye.
Emily Nussbaum, television critic for The New Yorker, talking with the writer Lindy West. You can find Emily's writing on The Fosters, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and some of the other shows they talked about at newyorkerradio.org. I'm David Remnick.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.